Welcome to the Comic Anvil episode 3. We're on a roll here, kids. With us today, we have our usual staff, Anthony.
Hello.
Dylan.
Hey.
Yasmin.
Hello.
Wesley.
Yellow.
All right. So, once again, we're here to talk about comic books because we love comic books a lot.
Yep, so pretty much.
Who's really, really excited today?
I'm pretty excited.
Okay, man, you get to go first.
I get to go first?
You bet.
Yeah.
Awesome, I get to go first. I feel honored! All right, actually, I've been going over my three comics. This time, by the way, I had not winged this week. I actually had my comics prepared ahead of time. So, woohoo, go me! All right. Alright, my first one I want to look into is Witch Doctor number 1. Came out a couple weeks back from Image. And this book is awesome. You got Dr. Vincent Morrow, who's a supernatural, like, sort of doctor kind of sort of fellow, who basically, I think kind of Dr. House mixed in with, Yeah, kind of an action hero, Dr. House. It's kind of trippy to explain it to you because the issue is kind of a strange horror mix sort of deal. It's a really fun book, though. Oh my gosh, it is ridiculously fun.
Cool. Who's the writer?
Actually, the writer on it is Brandon Stafford, and the artist is Lucas Kettner.
And it's from Image.
Yeah.
And it's just the first issue that just started.
First issue just started. The second issue, I do believe, comes out. I think either this week or next week. One of the two. And it's supposed to be. I was one of the books I've been looking forward to since it first got announced. And when I read the first issue, I just went, this is the coolest thing ever.
Cool. Okay. Anything else? Nobody else read it, I take it?
Nope.
I never even heard about it, to be honest with you, so nice.
Honestly, from what I'm getting the idea of, this comic was very underordered.
Yeah.
Because I think myself and one other friend of mine are the two other people that actually had heard about it. Everyone else kind of went like, what's Witch Doctor? And it's like, oh boy. But really, this book deserves a lot more attention than what it's getting right now because it is one very impressive little book. I mean, the art's good. The story's fun. And also the way the guy uses the scalpel is the coolest thing ever because it's a giant freaking sword. His scalpel is a giant freaking sword.
Well, big swords are always cool.
Everybody swords rule, dude!
Yeah, I gotcha. I got a lightsaber. I like lightsabers.
I like lightsabers, too.
Yeah. But a big sword would be pretty damn cool right about now.
A big sword is always awesome. Yeah. Especially for scalpeling. Demons.
That pretty reminds awesome. Me, when I was in San Diego, some guy made must have been 9 feet long, this sword he built, and it was pure oak, and it was so heavy. Oh. I had to ask him, I was like, can I hold it? And he was like, yeah, sure, it's pretty heavy. And it was heavy. I was like, wow.
9 feet long?
Yeah, it was huge.
Jeez, dude.
I know, I was like, it looked like 4 2-by-4s kind of painted and nailed together. It was very impressive what he had done. At least cosplayers, they go out of their way, you know, to make stuff cool, and that was very cool. Big swords rock.
Big swords always rock.
Okay. Yasmin?
Yep.
I can hear you.
Okay. So, in light of recent news that the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Century 1969, will be debuting at the San Diego Comic Con this year, I thought I'd kind of go and give everyone like a recap of the Century series so far. So, has anyone read any of the books?
I've seen the movie.
That's not something you should admit to, Eric.
But I saw the movie. I didn't say I liked it.
I've read the
book. I own it on DVD.
I had
There's a reason I own it, but...
Okay. I had a friend show me the League movie once, and I kind of made fun of it the entire time until she told me, shush, watch the movie.
No. No one should watch the movie. It's so upsetting that, like, everyone, like, the public perception of the book is that when they see it on the on like a bookshelf, they'll be like, "Oh, that's that shit movie," and they won't pick it up. And it's so upsetting because I will like hand it over to people, be like, "You guys, please read this," and they'll be like, "Okay," and then they don't. I'm like, "Okay," but anyways, so for anyone who isn't familiar with the books, we have, like, it's originally kind of an exciting Justice League of Victorian England adventure that brought together some of the 19th century's greatest fictional characters, and now it's moved past its Victorian route into the League's current adventure that's made up of three books, like, century that's made up of three books that last the last span the last 100 years. So the first book from the three parts, 1910, which came out a couple years ago, is the introduction of Jenny Dakar, Nemo's estranged daughter, and how she ends up being the second generation kind of fearsome captain of the Nautilus, who sets out to basically rain hell on everything. Meanwhile, at the same time, the League is concentrating on following the source behind a dream that one of their new members, Tom Carnacki, has, like, about a sinister cult, a naked girl, a catchy song, and the end of the world. So they don't really do much. They meet a man unstuck in time, and an evil occultist, Oliver Haddo, who they thought was dead, and basically just run around trying to figure everything out before it happened. So the new book, 1969, which is set in the swinging 60s, follows through with the occult theme from 1910, and it's the middle chapter of Century that draws on a lot of 60s fiction, and it elaborates on, like, the developing relationship between everyone, like Alan and Mina and Orlando. So at the same time, it's kind of foreshadowing what's going to happen in the last book of the series that's going to bring the new Murray group to our present day and time. And as if none of you have read it, right? None of you have read Volume 1, 2, or the Black Dossier, right?
Not I.
Nope.
I've actually read Volume 1, 2, and also, and I have actually not read all the Black Dossier, and
it's kind of hard to finish it all, even though it's a small book, but anyways, 1910 was kind of heavily referenced in the Black Dossier, but there are still some traces of little backup text pieces in the dossier about stuff that happens in 1969, although the dossier was written in 1950. And what I really love about this series is that Alan Moore is one of those writers who can make all of these literary characters and elements, which seem to be completely unrelated, kind of all work together and seamlessly kind of form a new and compelling stories. And the art, the words and pictures just tightly fit together. And Kevin O'Neill's art is perfectly set and toned for the story. So for anyone who hasn't read it, I suggest picking up, if you're not really interested, at least like the first volume. If you'd like to go on to probably go directly to 1910,
I always meant to read those, but I never did.
Yeah, I guess most people have them up there with those lists of books that you're like, oh, okay, Fables and like other kind of books that everyone knows is amazing but never really has time to read.
Right. The wealth helps too. Excellent. So
nicely done.
Extraordinary gentleman. Yes, well said, sister.
Better said than your humble host here, I must say.
Sorry?
I said better said than my own pick of myself from your humble host, I must say.
Okay. Dylan.
All right.
Wake, buddy.
Yeah, I've been awake for hours at this point.
Cool.
Yeah, I got up early today, got a haircut and everything.
Ooh!
Awesome.
Who's a big boy, eh? Who's a big boy?
Did you keep your sight?
Sorry, that was patronizing. I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Red Skull Incarnate by Greg Pak, and I might be butchering this, but Mirko Kolak, I believe, is the artist's name.
Sure.
And basically, if you don't know what the book is, it's retelling, well, actually, I guess it's just a telling of Johann Schmidt's, like, origins, how he got to become the Red Skull and how he met Hitler and everything. This first issue is he starts out in an orphanage and then eventually sees some Nazis and decides that's what he wants to do, essentially. It's just a really interesting look at one of comics' most evil villains with some dirt. And if you've read Magneto Testament, also by Greg Pak, it's very similar. And
cool. I was looking at that, man. And a lot of people are talking about it. I think I should have bought it. Do you think that's going to have anything to do with Fear Itself or anything like that? Like, backstory for it, maybe? Or just straight up, it's a retelling of...
I think it's just kind of... They put it out so that people, you know, who see the movie and want to read the comics...
Oh, good one. I never thought about the movie.
They did a really good job with this. I
actually looked at like the origin.
Yeah.
So it looks good and it reads good.
Yep. It's a bit graphic. There's some animal violence, but you can stomach it.
Animal violence? There's blood and guts?
Yeah.
Yes, there is. Oh, yeah. They don't... Nothing squeam, nothing holding back on this one. It's there.
Mm, cool. Ooh. I guess when you're trying to portray Nazis, you want to make them as vile as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one cares when it's Nazis, do they? Because everyone knows Nazis are just evil anyway, so no one cares. Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
You're a Nazi, you're a bastard. Let's show how evil you can be.
Nice. All right.
Pretty much.
Cool. I'm going to have to check that out, I think. What about you,
it's
Anthony?
Well worth it.
Yeah, and Dylan, I was like on Twitter, and Dylan psyched me up so much for this. I went and I read it, and it really is like... It's a really good story, so just backing what he set up.
That's cool. Anthony, have you got a pick?
I have, actually, yeah. And my pick is actually a book that's 6 years old, and I've only just got around to reading it because I don't know, I don't really have a reason. And it's Young Avengers Volume 1, the Sidekicks arc. So it's issues 1 to 6 of the Young Avengers run by Alan Heinberg and Jim Chung. I downloaded them on this Grapply thing, which I've just started using it, and I read the first 6 issues, and I really love them with the artwork and the character interactions. He's given like the characters' relationships with each other, and he's managed to do it within the 6 issues that I've read, and made me actually like care about the characters. And I thought it was, when I first seen the title, I think what put me off it is I thought it was just going to be like the Kid Avengers, do you know, where I don't know, just like giving him like relationships with the current Avengers, like, oh, you're that his and her kid, and you're his and her kid, and just stuff like that, which I think is what put me off it. But
I remember looking at those on the digital library on Marvel website, I believe, and I didn't think I was gonna like it at all, but I was surprised at how good it was.
Yeah, it's I'm gonna read the other 6 because there's 12 issues in total. I'm gonna read the other 6 eventually, right. And it's
it's good.
A Kang story. Yeah, I'm trade waiting on Children's Crusade as well. I'm gonna get that one.
That's ongoing right now, isn't it? Like,
I think it's a mini series, but it's bi-monthly, but it's taking forever to come out.
Yeah, it's
like bi-monthly, so.
Yeah. It's coming out now, is what I meant.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be waiting for the trade on that one too, I think.
It's good. I'm not sure if it's going to be 8 issues when it's finished or 12. It's one of them two. But it's apparently that one's set between. It's set after House of M, I think, because it's searching for the Scarlet Witch, pretty much, ain't it?
Yeah, you only read the first 6 issues. I'm not going to say anything about it.
And I mean the Children's Crusade.
Right.
I don't know. That's just what I've got from what I've seen online. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where it's placed in the timeline. But once again, well, does it matter if the story's good? Who cares what time it is?
Yeah. It's a good it's been on hold for like, it's basically, that's the reason why they couldn't really do anything with Scarlet Witch, because they were waiting for this story to come out here. So it's like just after House of M, and just I read the first issue and I liked it. I decided, yeah, I have to trade wait this, because if I try to wait for it bi-monthly to bi-monthly, I'll go nuts.
Mm-hmm. That's what Spider-Man and Wolverine, Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine did to me.
Oh, I still need to read that, actually.
Yeah, it did the same thing.
But I it was worth the wait, I think. It was good.
Yeah,
I
like definitely. That book.
Okay, so I guess I'll pick my one book that I read, because I went and bought some doubles, I guess. But I picked up Wolverine versus the Marvel Universe. Universe versus Wolverine. It's kind of the prelude. Whoa, what's going on? It's a bit of a prelude. It is the prelude to the Punisher versus the Marvel Universe, or Marvel Universe versus Punisher book story that Jonathan Mayberry did. Mm-hmm. And, man, it's good. I like it. I don't know. It's gory the way I like it. And these zombies are not normal zombies, as per usual. I don't know. What can I say? I only got the first issue. It's coming out now. I think issue 2 comes out next week, I think. I could be wrong there.
I think it does, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It's touched upon in the Punisher series, and then in this one it's really fleshed out what actually happened to the universe, I guess. The alternate universe that it's set in. And I'm babbling.
I haven't read it myself, so I have really not much to say on it. So
okay, no, that's cool.
Eric, I've got a question. Are those Versus comics, they're not set within, like, the continuity of, like, the 616, are they? Are they, like, their own universe or something?
I think so. I think it's an alternate universe type take or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Either they're just hilariously out of continuity, you just kind of go, it's in some point, just make up your own thoughts on it.
Well, it can't be part of the 616, I mean.
Yeah.
Everybody goes bad. So, who did I start with again? Wesley, we're back to you, man.
Back to me. Actually, this one I just read this morning. There's a book that came out about a week ago called Rod Racer from Toby Cypress. And it's a graphic novel that came out of Image. And it's pretty interesting little book. It's about a sort of like a stock car racing with mixed in with a demolition derby from hell. And it's pretty badass. I am not going to lie.
Twisted Metal?
Sort of like Twisted Metal, but basically no weaponry, and it is pretty much a no-holds-barred, smash the crap out of each other on a racetrack, mixed in with the fact that this guy's being set up by the Yakuza to pretty much, if he doesn't win this race, you're basically doomed, dude. And it's a pretty slick little book. I was pretty surprised by it. The art style was pretty slick. I kind of think of it as more... Almost gave me an image of very old-school Fleischer Superman animation mixed in with mixed in with a little bit of, you're going to laugh, Aha, Take on Me.
Nice.
I'm actually familiar with that. Oh my god. I still have that album on vinyl. Thanks for the reminder.
No problem. Good song. Just go wean away. You know?
That's a bold statement. Fleischer animation and an Aha video? Okay.
I'm not kidding you. I mean, if you take a look at the book, it's kind of like the flow of it was more of that style. And I kind of, oddly enough, I looked and went, yeah. And I know it's a really good series. It's a really good, not series, well, good graphic novel. And it's a very fun read. I can highly say it's $7.99, and it's a pretty fun read. And it's interesting to kind of see how all these characters play off of each other. Because you think you're getting one thing, but then you get something, by the end of it, you're going... Okay, this is a very pleasant little surprise. Cool. Probably some of the best $7.99 I've spent recently.
Nice. You got some obscure picks this week, my friend. I like that.
I was going for it.
No, that's cool. Like, I mean, I've never heard of these things, and I do look through the previews every month. So that's cool. I'll have to check that out.
Can I give a fun side note for you?
Sure.
My comic store, actually, I am now officially the indie guy of my comic store because all, like, the Image books got damaged this week. So he said, Wes, all the Image comics got damaged. You can look through them if you want and see if they're not too horribly damaged, but I think this only affects you because I think you're one of the only people that buys anything independent at our store. Great. I'm like, I'm the indie guy.
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
I know. I don't mind it. I actually like the title. I wear it with a badge of honor.
Cool. Very cool. Damn it, I forgot whose turn it is.
Mine?
Yes, Yasmin.
Yeah, I have the second pick is, I know you guys are not going to like it, but it has its kind of good points. And it's Mark Millar's and Steve McNiven's Nemesis.
I love that book.
Oh, wow.
I love that book.
Just read it last night.
The reason I brought it up is because, like a lot of comic writers, Millar was inspired by Alan Moore, but he has a very, very different relationship with the movie business. So, Mark Millar partners up with Steve McNiven, who's worked with him before on Old Man Logan and Civil War. And basically, Mark Millar tries to, like, throw us a curveball and asks, what if Batman was the Joker? Then he answers his question by giving us Nemesis, who's a rich international cop killer with an attitude problem, who's been murdering top cops in Asia, and now he's got his eye on the latest target, Blake Morrow, kind of an aging Washington-based chief of police, who has similarities to Batman's Commissioner Gordon, which kind of makes it even more interesting. And I really like this, but it's flawed. I mean...
Do you mean all the blood it's got in it?
No, it's not that. It's just that... For something, like, for someone who came up with Kick-Ass, this kind of feels half-assed. Like, the thing is, Mark Millar is really good at coming up with an idea and really fleshing it out. Like, he takes things to an extreme and thinks about them, and everything kind of fits together and works. Here, it felt like he came up with this idea and started writing, meaning he didn't take time to make it work out, so it kind of feels rushed.
I give her it.
I disagree. Yeah, have you read Chosen? You've never read Chosen? If you read that story, it ends the same kind of way that Nemesis does.
Isn't he writing more Nemesis, though?
Does it seem like it's half-assed? I don't think so. I think he leaves it for you to open for
interpretation. No, it's rushed. I mean, he doesn't develop anything properly. I mean, it's still a fun read, even though it needed development. I was kind of interested in the Riddler shtick Nemesis had for a second, and all the different character-altering twists and false explanations and setups, which show you, like, a glimpse of the direction Nemesis could have gone in, but, I mean, in the book, he says for himself, he's like, I'm rich and I'm bored. He says so anticlimactically, like, it left me thinking, is there something else, like, Millar was setting up? But in the end, it turns out Millar was trolling us and basically said, it's like, I'm so awesome, just like, that my characters don't need deeper motivation than just boredom. Like, he was, like, I really liked it. I just, like... Nemesis has a great setup and a couple of undeniably well-crafted twists, but I just wish there was a little less supervillain posing and a little more actual story. Mm-hmm. But
it is what it is, I think. Yeah. I went for it because of that. All the just crazy.
I guess, so if you're a diehard, like, Mark Millar fan, you might find a lot to like in the story. If you're looking for something relatively deep, you'll be a little disappointed or flat out confused.
Yeah. I'll agree with that statement.
Yeah, and if you're just a fan of violent action, Nemesis dishes this out by the truckload.
You betcha.
Oh, mama.
And it looks good,
I will say this. The artwork by Steve McNiven in it is really good. That's why I bothered to actually read issue 4, because after 3, I just... The thing he does at the end of issue 3, I was like, really? That is, like...
Disgusted you, just, did it?
It's too vulgar. It doesn't need to be, though. But there's no reason for it to be like that at all.
I think that's what it was.
No, but apparently, when I picked this up, I wasn't really familiar with McNiven's art, and I really liked it, but then I found out that it wasn't, like, it sits in the shadow of his better stuff on, like, Old Man Logan and Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
It was the inks, I think. The inks were light.
It had a dollar look to it. Like, his art had a dollar look to it than what it had. Like, Old Man Logan had a lot more of a stronger look to it. And then Civil War had a stronger look.
Details and stuff.
Yeah, I want to see this new Captain America number one that he's drawn. I want to see what that looks
like. Oh, it's beautiful.
Is it good?
It's so beautiful. I actually liked it. It's a really good read. I was very surprised at how much I liked it.
And his art's a lot better in that book, right? What?
Steve's back and it's rocking, baby.
Yeah, but McNiven's art's way better, right?
Oh, yeah, it's McNiven's actually art's a little bit, has a little bit of a stronger look to it in Captain America number one. Captain America really had a nice, really cool look to it, and I actually read Captain America number one in the comic store, and I also ended up buying it afterwards because I went, this was so cool.
Cool. I can't wait to get it. I'm going to read it too. Okay. Leslie, Anthony?
Dylan.
Damn it.
Yeah, Dylan next.
Who's next?
Yeah, it is. I thought it was Anthony.
I don't know, you guys fight over it.
I don't care. If he doesn't want to go.
Alright, since we brought it up anyway, I was actually going to pick Captain America 1, and since it's already been brought up, I will carry on going about Captain America number 1. I think the thing with McNiven's art as well is, when over like the past year or so, when Bucky's been in the costume, the with the Butch guys, it's kind of this scratchy, almost rough look to the art. But now that Steve McNiven's on it and Steve's back in the costume, almost it's got like cleaner, more straighter lines, which I think really suits it. You know, because of like Return of Steve's like this big thing, and the change in the art style really suits it, and yeah, Captain America 1, it's a really good read. It starts with a funeral with, I'm sure you know who it is, Eric, even though you haven't read it yet.
I heard.
It's not... Yeah. Honestly, I saw the previews and I thought it was going to be Bucky Barnes, but it's not, so okay.
What? Oh, really? I don't know then.
Oh, okay.
What did you... No, it's not actually Bucky, the funeral. Oh, shit, I just spoiled it. Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. That's okay, I'm a reader.
Well, It's technically not a spoiler because you don't know who it is. I haven't said whose funeral it is, but think what I liked about this issue though, it seems like Nick Fury and Dum Dum are going to be like new supporting roles in the Captain America comic, and they haven't really been in it for like a while. So I think that's going to be really fun seeing Nick and Dum Dum hang around with Steve Rogers and stuff.
What Nick was doing Secret Warriors for a while.
Yeah, and that's finished now, isn't it? So
yeah,
it just finished up. So
I need to read that. I'm waiting for an omnibus of that or something.
Same here.
Yeah. Rather than go out and get like six trades, I'd rather just buy like a collected edition.
I just want a giant omnibus, like another freaking tank omnibus in my collection.
Yeah.
Yep.
What do you call them? Coffee table books.
Coffee table weapons. Coffee table.
Don't. Karate chop.
Karate. Boom!
Okay. So Captain America number one. Yay, we're excited. Dylan, you must have picked some Batman comic or something this week, man.
Yeah, actually.
Ha-ha!
Detective Comics 879 by Scott Snyder and Francesco Francovia. Batman actually doesn't appear in the issue, so...
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah. Basically what it is it's a continuation of Snyder's run, of the secondary story, I guess, which is Jim Gordon and his son, James Gordon Jr. Everyone kind of doesn't trust because he did some bad stuff before, but it's finally kind of shows what he's up to now in this issue. And we also get to see the Joker. Well, actually, we don't really see the Joker. He's kind of covered up the whole issue, but it's... probably one of the creepiest books I've read in a while because of the Mazzucchelli style art with the great color job, plus the writing. It's perfectly matched duo to create a great atmosphere and tell a good story.
Cool.
It's a good book.
Did you write a review for that book?
I did, yeah.
And where would we find that review?
You would find that review on nerdsontherocks.com.
Awesome stuff.
Look!
Plug. Anthony writes reviews for Nerds on the Rocks as well.
when Anthony can be bothered, he writes reviews from Nerds on the Rocks.
I think Anthony writes them when he gets excited. He's like, oh, I'm going to review this book.
Yeah, I'm really just lazy, so.
That's cool, man. It's all good. Well, there's our Batman plug for the week. Especially got another one. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't have another one.
Okay.
I've got that one. I've got that issue coming in the mail, hopefully on Monday, and I look forward to reading Detective Comics. Enjoy it.
Cool. So, I guess we'd be back to Wesley, because I'm out of things to talk about.
Ah, yes. I've actually got a third, since I call it the, if we had time for it, a third WTF pick that's more of the, you gotta be what?
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's actually from the Marvel Vault one-shots they've been doing of the unreleased Imperial Files, and it's the Defenders book that came out this week.
Ooh, I've got that one coming as well. Is it good?
Actually, yes, and it's kind of that crap insane in parts, but it's actually a lot of fun. It's basically kind of a weird, the text, I'm not going to spoil too much of it, how they kind of, but it's kind of weird. It kind of starts out as you're going, what in the world is going on in this? Because Mark Bagley drew this comic back as a fill-in issue, like way back when it was set up during Buzek and Larson's Defenders run they did back in like the early thousands. And and they basically have had it sitting in the vault somewhere, and then Vinny Nicenzia wrote the book, but then he went, Kurt's like, well, they want to do this issue. Like, Vinny's like, I lost the script in a hard drive crash about ages ago. And Buzek kind of just made up a story for it. They said, looked at the art and said, okay, I'll just make up a story. Hang on a minute. And it's kind of a very, and you can, but what's kind of neat is it works perfectly for what they ended up trying to do with it. And basically it's just, you initially kind of start out as you've got you see like these kids kind of get transported into like this, like all the different bodies of like Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, Hulk, and Namor. And they're all kind of wandering about going, oh wow, we've got these new superpowered bodies. Awesome. And they're just wandering about like living out these weird fantasies as their heroes. And it's pretty fun. When I was reading it, I went, this is a very fun little Marvel Vault book. And I kind of sad it didn't come out back in the day, because I would have been curious what the initial story would have been planned. But this is a pretty cool deal too.
What's the price tag on that?
It's
$2.99.
You said Marvel, not DC, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it's a Marvel. Yeah. It's Defenders.
The Marvel.
Okay.
Defenders.
Marvel print $2.99 books. Oh, do believe they? It or not. Oh, yeah, I believe didn't. It or not. They do.
I wasn't sure about that.
Just all the titles. Yeah, all the titles you want to buy are $3.99.
Yeah.
Red,
funny how that is. $2.99.
Yeah. Okay.
I picked up the Human Torch and the Hulk one from the vault they did the other week.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was Ditko, and I actually didn't really like that one that much. Because I didn't really get much of a sense of... I didn't get much of a sense of Ditko's artwork in the book, to be honest. It's just... I don't know. Did you read that one, Wesley?
I actually read it. It was a pretty odd... There's actually a funny story behind it. They actually had to clean up a lot of Ditko's artwork, because they had the basic sort of version of Ditko's artwork, and they had Kessel kind of clean it up a little bit to kind of make it a little bit more smoother, because... And because it was, there's a weird fun fact about Ditko that in his last days in Marvel, he would not draw Spider-Man or he would not draw Doctor Strange. Those are the two characters he would never draw. Everyone else, perfectly fine, but he would not draw Spider-Man or Doctor Strange. The two characters he would never touch. That's except weird. there is a scene where he has Spider-Man as a toy, but I guess that's okay because Spider-Man was a toy. So. But outside of that, it's sort of like his rule. I did not know this rule until we were talking about this at our comic store, actually, this past week. So, just an odd little fun fact for you.
That is odd. I wonder what the reasoning behind...
Because Ditko's a very, very big name.
Because he drew a lot of Spider-Man and Strange, didn't he?
There's a lot of stuff going on with that one. If you've ever seen the documentary, The Search for Steve Ditko, it actually gives a lot of details into why Ditko is... kind of the way he is.
I'm gonna look that up.
That's apparently people who like I think Bendis said he actually went to Steve Ditko's house once to meet him, and Steve Ditko just didn't open the door for him or something, and he's done that to quite a few people. Do you know where he just doesn't want to, he's just not interested in talking to anybody in the business. So he sounds a bit of an ass.
That's what I've, and also, but weirdly enough, he actually does talk to Jonathan Ross in the in the documentary, and he just basically talks to him behind closed doors. I don't, but the weird part is you can actually find Deep Ditko in the New York City phone book. You can just look him up and go call him or come to his apartment if you really want to. He won't let you in. He probably won't talk to you, but you can find him.
That's weird.
He needs to have a Twitter.
Why, so he can't tweet? This is the Steve Ditko account. Zero tweets. Everybody will be think he's a spam bot.
Oh, that was on BBC. That documentary was on BBC 4, and I missed it. Damn, I'm good with now.
It's on YouTube, actually. Like, the entire documentary's on YouTube. You can just look it up. It's split up into, like, four or five different parts, like 10 minutes a piece.
Cool.
You can watch it all.
I'll be watching.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
We'll do it. Cool, man. Thanks for pointing that out.
No problem.
Wait, where are we? Wesley? Yasmin?
Yes.
Yes?
I didn't have a third pick, but okay. I should think of something now.
Do you want a minute? We'll let Anthony go again if he wants. And then you will
no,
come
no,
up.
I thought of one.
Okay. You assume I have another pick.
I do. Good one. Sorry.
So from Dark Horse Comics, we have Gerard Way and Gabriel Boz, Umbrella Academy, the second book, Dallas.
Wait, Nick, is that you? Nick? Sorry, the guy on our other podcast, he loves that stuff too.
Yeah. So basically, if no one's familiar with the book, the origin story of Umbrella Academy is kind of like X-Men, if I had to compare it to other comic books. Ooh. So it started off, so basically in a kind of inexplicable worldwide event, 47 babies were spontaneously born by women who didn't show any signs of pregnancy. So millionaire inventor Sir Reginald Hargreaves, the Professor X in this book, adopted seven of these children to save the world. And these kids formed the Umbrella Academy, a group of superheroes with bizarre powers who try to live as a dysfunctional family. And they split up after their first fight against the Eiffel Tower, which was controlled by the zombie robot Gustav Eiffel, I think, and reunite after Hargreaves dies to save the world from their sister, the White Violin. And Dallas takes place after their apocalyptic battle with their sister, and it's where they have, like, in this one, they have to stop this one organization that has time-traveling capabilities from one of their, Dallas takes place after their apocalyptic battle with their sister, the White Violin, and they have to, in this one, stop this one organization that has time-traveling capabilities from assassinating JFK, and...
What? Oh, okay.
It's and what I find amazing about this one is that the way the plot elements are sometimes introduced, like without prior explanation, and the way like the characters they react to situations like really humanely, even though they're not, I don't know, they're kind of odd. There is this style that feels really organically unique. I mean, you just can't pull off this kind of creativity without skill. And Gerard Way surprised us all by telling one hell of a story. And what's it called? And Gabriel Boz's art is so expressive and vivid, and it's so fluid, and his shapes and forms and layouts are so dynamic that they can carry the entire story by themselves. Like, I really liked his art in the first book, but, his art on this one, it reaches a whole new level. I mean, he does a fantastic job grounding, the insane stuff that goes on, and he gives enough attention to the details, like these two traveling assassins Hazel and Cha-Cha, they have cartoon masks on. And he still manages to make it, like, look adorable, but at the same time, like, really menacing. So, yeah, I'd suggest everyone go and pick this one up, because this is one of my favorite books ever.
And that's from Dark Horse or Image?
Yeah, Dark Horse.
Dark Horse, right. You said
that. Yeah, the reason I want to read that, actually, is because Gabriel Bard does the artwork on it, and his artwork for Casanova, which he does with Matt Fraction, it's so good. It'd be worth me buying just for his artwork, because it's just beautiful looking. And Daytripper as well. That's Gabriel Barr.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm gonna check it out eventually when I can.
I don't think I've ever really checked out his art before, so don't really have much to say on that, I guess. Anybody else read it?
Nope. I've read the first Umbrella Academy, but not the second yet, so that's why I'm just going, okay, I gotta succumb and read the second now, because now I'm going, okay, I gotta get this now.
She's good at that. She convinces you to read stuff.
Well done.
Well done. Alright, so I guess we're back to Dylan or Anthony. Do you guys have third picks?
Yeah, I've got a third.
Okay, fight.
Wanda.
I'm gonna go with the prerequisite X-Men pick, X-Men Schism number 1 by our friend Jason Aaron and Carlos Pacheco.
Nice.
If you don't know what it is, it's just the X-Men event of the year, I guess, which is supposed to boil down to conflict between Cyclops and Wolverine. You don't really get into that too much in the first issue. It's just the setup where they're at an arms conference and a mutant from Grant Morrison's run shows up and causes some trouble, so you know, Sentinels start popping up again, and needless to say, the mutants aren't too happy about that.
Nice.
So, you know, we've talked about Jason Aaron before on this podcast. He knows how to write X-Men and action scenes and all that. And then Carlos Pacheco is some of the most realistic art, like, in comics, but it doesn't sacrifice realism for, he can do it. The realism doesn't affect his art. Like, he can do all the crazy stuff that we expect from an X-Men book while keeping it real. I heard some complaints about this, actually, though. People were complaining that it was much centered around Cyclops and Wolverine.
But
and,
I thought it was.
Yeah, okay.
Wait. Hold on. Can I interrupt something? People were complaining about a Marvel book. Really? That's shocking. Sorry, carry on.
Well, yeah, I saw on Twitter people were... The whole event is supposed to be centered around Cyclops and Wolverine. They're on the cover for, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
And then people are complaining because it's all around about them.
Yeah, but you get a couple scenes back at Utopia, but most of it is Cyclops and Wolverine. And, like, what the hell are you expecting, people?
Yeah, that's confusing.
Yeah. A lot
of people are weird, I guess.
The internet.
Yeah, the internuts.
Yeah. May I fire in a little comment there? It's actually kind of funny that people are complaining about being centered around Cyclops and Wolverine, considering that's what the event centered around is.
Yeah,
exactly. Basically their separation, so you're okay, kids.
Yeah, weirdos.
Just ridiculous.
Internets.
Yep. Interwebs.
Internets.
Web nuts. Those are web nuts.
Okay. Anthony, do you have another one?
I have something. It's a book I started last night. It's, Spider-Woman Agent of S.W.O.R.D. by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev. Sure no one's surprised that I'm talking about another Brian Michael Bendis book, but I started it last night, and...
You be quiet.
I'm about 3 issues into it, and I really... I've enjoyed it. I can't really talk about it that much, but... Just what... I like Maleev's art, so... Yeah. But...
I love Alex Maleev's art.
Really?
It's just, yes, really. It's just too. His art. It's kind of it's realistic, but at the same time, it's not. And yeah. I'm just tempted to pick this up for Alex Maleev's work.
Have you guys ever read End that they did? I think it was Maleev and who's the writer? It's based
probably
on
Bendis.
No.
I don't think he's done much work without Bendis. I think most of the stuff he's done has been with Bendis, to be honest. But,
I'm pretty sure. I don't like his superhero work. I already said that, I guess, didn't I?
I like his Daredevil a lot.
I guess it would probably be suitable for something street-like.
Yeah.
But the Stephen King's End that he did was awesome because it's about some... I don't know, it's kind of confusing to explain, man, but there's no superheroes in it. It's all based in kind of reality with a little unreality at the same time.
I think I've heard of this before.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Why can't I find it? Man, help me! I got nothing, I guess.
I can't think of it either, so don't feel bad. I'm, like, blanking the sin on it.
And Marvel. It was Guggenheim, damn it!
There you go.
That's what it was. Guggenheim and Maleev. And it's an adaptation of Stephen King's short story, and it's awesome. If you like Maleev's art, I think you guys would like that.
I like Maleev's art myself.
That was the first thing that I was like, okay, I didn't want it at first, to be honest with you, because of his art. And then after the first issue, I was like, all right, I'll keep checking it out. It was only 4 issues, but by the end of the 4th issue, I was like, that was so damn cool. I could care less of who the artist was. It was just good. But his art helped embellish the story a lot, so I give him props for that.
I actually finally got my my Scarlet trade as well from Amazon, but I had to send it back because it's a dent in it. It's supposed to be brand new, and so I haven't read it yet because I sent it back. You know, but I'm looking forward to tucking into that. Speaking when you send me
trades, my wife left my 8th trade of 100 bullets too close to the stove, and it melted the glue on the binding and popped the cover off. I'm like, damn, man. Oh well, easy fix.
Oh yeah.
These things happen. Don't leave your comics near the stoves, kids.
Good advice. Heater.
My buddy, you guys ever have any problems like with that, with damaged comics? That you didn't, you know, like, I don't know. I remember in grade 10, I'd hid a bunch of comics under my carpet from my dad because he used to take my comics away when I was bad. So I'd hide, and then my basement flooded, and I lost I lost my What If Wolverine Met Conan. So sad.
Oh, wow.
I know, so sad.
Actually, everything I get is damaged.
Oh.
It's really sad because here we don't really have I don't have a comic store. It's just like a shelf at the back of the supermarket.
Okay.
And they have like they used to get like a lot of comics before like 10 issues of each one, but nowadays they just get like 2 issues. Oh. And the lady there is my friend.
So she stashes them for you.
Yeah, she does. Nice. Yeah, I was like away for a month, and they're supposed to send them back in like a week, which is so stupid. I don't understand why, but they're supposed to send them back in a week. So she just hid them for me in like a drawer. So basically, everything I've gotten so far is damaged.
Oh, I don't know what to say.
That would annoy the shit out of me.
Yeah,
Amazon.
What's that?
No, go on, Dylan.
I have a bunch of old, like, detective comics that I don't know what the hell happened, but the covers are, like, ripped off, so it's just like, the inside pages.
So sad that sometimes I have to, like, if I really, really, really want an issue, I have to, like, go and look for it in, like, in another shop, and it's so sad that I see all of these comics, and all that's left of them is, like, half of the first, the front cover, and I really don't know what to say.
Oh, that'd be just, ugh. I'd be pulling my own hair out if I see that.
And do you guys, when you get your comics, do you put them in, like, bags, or?
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah,
after all of you?
Bag and bottom.
My shop does it for me.
I depends on the comic. Sometimes I bag and board, like, but other times it's just like, I just don't. It kind of depends. I don't really buy my comics to usually sell. It's just usually mainly I mostly buy them because I know for the most part I'm going to keep them for a very long while. So, And then, of course, then some of my comics end up becoming worth money, and then I go, oh crap, time to find the bags and boards now, because then it's like certain. Because I've actually have a few comics that have inadvertently become worth money over the years. Some weird circumstance of life there.
See, where I live, it's a bit of a scam. They bag and board all the books so they can charge an extra 25 to 50 cents per copy.
Oh,
yeah, like it's a scam. I'm sorry. I know my shop charges me for bag and boards when they send them to me in the mail, but it's not as much as, you know, it's, I think it's more like 10 cents per for bag and board, which is acceptable.
Yeah, is that I'm looking at a sheet, all? But that's about mine.
And if I go there to the store, though, they're not bagged and boarded. Does that make sense? The only bag and board is because they mail them to me.
You guys are lucky. You pay for the what the cover price. Everything here is super overpriced because they have to get them like sent over from there. So what I pay like I don't know like three times to like what the original price is like in dirhams, and then I managed like I talked to the people at the supermarket. I was like, that's not fair, you have to bring it down, and they did bring it down in the end, like after like a big fight. But oh. Yeah, I had to pay a lot for my comics. And I didn't get them in mint condition, so I didn't get why.
Have you ever looked into some kind of internet ordering, or is that not available? Yeah. In your country.
No, it is. That's how I get some of my like my trades. But right. It's just I'm so impatient. I want you. Myself now, yeah. Like, right now.
Yeah. Can't blame you there.
She's a true fan, ladies and gentlemen. You got to give her props for that.
Props.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anybody else got anything to talk about for comic books or any more nightmare stories about wrecked comic books? One time I got drunk. And I ripped the cover off my Fantastic Four comic when I stepped on it. Sometimes
which Fantastic Four comic was it?
It was during Wade and Ringo's run.
Pissed. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh.
It was before 500, I know that. But yeah. Grr. Grr.
True story, I bought a trade of a Cowboy Ninja Viking, and I was looking through it, and I was looking through the first initial thing, and two of the pages, fell straight out of the comic. Oh. Straight out of the trade. Yeah. I was like...
That sounds like Batman Arkham Asylum. I had to beg and plead my parents to go buy that book for me, because I was 17 at the time, and you had to be 18 to buy it. So I begged for it. I got it Christmas Day. I opened it up, took the wrapping off of it, took the plastic off of it, opened the two hardcover pages, and the whole thing fell in my lap.
No.
I was like, what the hell, man? And then as time went on, I was like, whatever, I'm going to read it anyways. As time went on, I found out this happened to everybody's issue, pretty much, on that first printing of that book. I was like, wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. Bad binding. It happens.
Do you guys have, like, any problems with, like, your parents and, like, comics?
I am a parent. No.
No, like, before, when you started off...
My dad used to give me Gears all the time. Why you spend all your money on comic books? You should have a car and a truck and a blah, blah. Like, Dad, I'm a dishwasher. I make $5 an hour.
Well, that sounds like my parents now.
It'll never stop. Well, I guess it did stop after I moved out. My dad realized what a freak I was. He took me to a comic store when they moved down south for a little while a couple years ago. And I went to go visit them. My dad's like, there's this comic store you should check out. I'm like... My dad wants to take me to a comic store. I'm like, all right. And I went in there, and I spent $200 on Sandman trades, and he couldn't believe it.
Wow.
He's like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I'm just filling the gaps. Just the ones I'm missing.
I'm quite lucky, though, because my dad actually still buys books, but he buys, like, the Masterworks, and then I'll be right back. Sorry. I'm going to have to go.
Okay, dude.
And I'll finish my story.
I
got to skip.
Fill in here. My parents are pretty good about that, probably because my oldest brother buys comics. Like, he's pretty much the reason I read comics. So, I don't know, maybe... I don't think he would have had to go through any crap with them, but, you know, they're just kind of like, you want to spend all your money on comics? Go ahead. Right. And so I do.
Well, one day you're going to have to spend your money on other stuff, too. Oh,
yeah.
There's a problem with this coal. Oh, wait.
We're still kids. We still have time.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. I found the older I got, the more money I had to spend on comics, so.
Oh, yeah, I used to only get random issues, and, you know, now I'm getting, like, so many books a month.
Something's wrong with the call here, man. I think we're gonna have to wrap it up, guys.
Alright, fine.
Yeah, that's cool.
I got a big red box here, man. Bad lines. I don't know what's going on. So, once again, the Comic Anime. has shared with you our love of comics.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Peace out.